has been done, not just the 78 lives that have been lost in our county, but the State Employment Development Department just came out with some numbers last week. They said between January and September, 399 businesses shut their doors permanently. The state received what's called end of liability reports from 399 companies, meaning that an employer's liability for employees is officially over. On the other hand, we have clear weather through the week with rain possible on Christmas Day, maybe halfway through at the valley floor, and snow in the mountains as low as 4,000 feet. For KZFR 90.1 FM, I'm Matt Fidler, wishing everyone a Merry Christmas.
This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Butte Report. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothing and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. For more information, call Cotton Party at 893-4923. Tonight we cover the Chico Unified School District, the Oroville City Council, the Oroville Elementary School District, and the Chico City Council, including interviews with Sharon Nilsson, Oroville Elementary School Board Member, outgoing Oroville City Council Member Linda Draper, and Chico City Council Member Alex Brown. Last Friday, the Chico Unified School District met for over 5 hours at the Pleasant Valley High's Center for the Arts. The meeting included the swearing-in of new trustees, the election of board officers, and a lengthy discussion about the reopening strategy after the new year. Caitlin Dalby and Matt Tennis were sworn in as the newest trustees. After that, Eileen Robinson was chosen as the new board president, and Kathy Kaiser was chosen for vice president. Tom Lando was chosen as clerk. Then the issue of reopening after the new year was discussed at length. Finally, in a 3-2 vote, the board decided to continue with the current AM-PM schedule to start the spring semester, and then during the scheduled February 3rd meeting, the board would reassess and consider a full reopening of the district. Caitlin Dalby and Tom Lando voted against the plan to continue the AM-PM schedule. Dalby stated her concern with the lack of a thorough contact tracing protocol. The district nurse confirmed that students are getting tested but still attending school while waiting for results, and the results can take up to 5 days. On Tuesday afternoon, Oroville City Council met with the main agenda item being a discussion of the proposed village at Ruddy Creek subdivision that would be located at This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Butte Report. Welcome to the Butte Report. It is Thursday, December 24th, 2020. The Butte Report is a weekly program reporting on and analyzing issues that affect our lives and our livelihood by focusing on local government, including the Board of Supervisors, the various municipalities, and even school districts and water districts within Butte County. I'm your host, Sue Hildebrand. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Bruce Jenkins Insurance, a retirement advisor offering Medicare assistance, including prescription drug and supplement plans, Social Security maximization, retirement income planning, and life insurance. You can reach Bruce Jenkins Insurance at 530-781-3592 or visit brucejenkinsinsurance.com. Tonight we'll cover the Paradise Irrigation District, actions by the city of Chico around homelessness, and get an update on COVID-19 in Butte County. Interviews include Tom Lando, interim general manager of the Paradise Irrigation District, and Corey Turner, lawyer with Legal Services of Northern California, who sent a cease and desist request to the city of Chico regarding enforcement of city ordinances. Last week, the Paradise Irrigation District Board of Directors conducted its regular monthly meeting. The Paradise Irrigation District supplied the town of Paradise with water, and since the campfire, has been rebuilding its infrastructure in order to once again deliver water to the rebuilding town of Paradise. The board approved sending the $1 million Almond Street main project out to bid. The project, which will address the water main that runs through the downtown, had been approved before the campfire, but priorities changed with the devastation of the town in 2018. Staff recommended that the project continue now because of the timing and the need to work with the town of Paradise. According to the board agenda report, at this time, the town of Paradise is moving forward with the Almond Street Gap Closure Project in order to take advantage of funding opportunities which have become available. Bids were received earlier this week on the 14th, with planned construction to begin no later than the beginning of summer 2021. The town's project must move forward very soon to ensure the use of the available funds, allowing for little to no flexibility in timing. Also discussed at the meeting were updates on various projects and the financial health of the irrigation district. I spoke with interim general manager of the Paradise Irrigation District, Tom Lando, to hear about the district's progress. I started by asking Lando to explain what exactly the Paradise Irrigation District is.
The Paradise Irrigation District is an independent special district with its own elected board of directors. We had two new board members elected during the November election. And as you already indicated, our charge is to provide water to the district boundaries, which are just a little bit larger than the town of Paradise. We have been working, and the staff has been working. I've only been there for about 5 months. The staff has been working since the campfire to restore the system and provide water to those who remain in the town and the development, which is actually fairly rapid in the town.
Tom Lando, you mentioned the campfire, and with the campfire, the water infrastructure was destroyed. Give us an overview of the progress being made in order to rebuild the water pipelines throughout the town.
The district has made tremendous strides over the last 2 years. And in fact, at this point, the district is fairly well caught up with the demand for new water lines and existing water lines. For 2 years, the district had to go in, tear up the lines that were destroyed, replace them, and replace most of the laterals. So from the main line, there's a lateral which serves homes and businesses, and virtually every one of those laterals had to be replaced. And in addition to that, there have been somewhere between 50 and 100 new building permits every month. So the district staff has had to scramble to make sure the water lines and the laterals are available to serve that development once it comes online. It's been a huge task. The staff has done it along with, we've hired several firms that specialize in replacing water lines to basically parallel our staff. So we have double the capacity. That firm, actually, their contract expires the end of March because staff will then be able to keep up with it by itself.
Tom Lando, let's talk about money. You talked about the rebuilding and how fast-paced this has been. It's got to take a lot of money. The Paradise Irrigation District has the water rights, and it has been supplying the town of Paradise with water for over 100 years. With the campfire, not only is the delivery system gone, but also the vast majority of your customers are gone. And a major concern for the Paradise Irrigation District is the loss of revenue. Tom Lando, talk about the various sources of funding that is allowing PID to remain viable while you rebuild the infrastructure, which, of course, allows the town to rebuild.
So there are many, many parts to that. First part is pretty surprising in that the district had 12,500 customers prior to Camp Fire. Camp Fire hits, we have 2,000 customers about basically on active service, and we actually have about 8,000 customers who decided to continue to have the ability to get PID service. So they pay a greatly reduced rate, but it's helped keep the district viable. However, as you also mentioned, we received some insurance money. We received FEMA money. We received some state money. And we continue to apply for grants from those various agencies. In addition, as you might expect, the town itself has been a great partner. No, they have not given us revenue, but together we've cooperated on projects throughout the community to try and meet both the rebuild needs as well as funding and construction needs. We, at this point, are still waiting for the PG&E settlement money. We have a fairly substantial reserve, which will last us for a while, but PG&E, we have a claim in with PG&E, as do many, many other people, and originally they were going to decide that claim the end of December. Now people have until the end of February to submit their claims. We were hoping and still are for 30 years of operating funds from the PG&E settlement. And, of course, by that time, we would hope that the town is completely rebuilt and the district is self-sufficient. We continue to apply for various special projects. And, in fact, when we started this back and forth, we were talking about Almond Street. That's a substantial main line for the district with a series of laterals. And we are applying for approximately $1 million from the state in funds to basically rebuild that line.
Tom Lando, there was a conversation about building a water pipeline from Paradise down to Chico. And the idea was, without enough customers up in Paradise, PID would possibly have to declare bankruptcy. So there had to be a way to sell that water. And that might be by building a pipeline between the two cities. Can you talk about if there's still a need to figure out how to raise money for the district?
That discussion is off base. It's partially true, but not regarding the district. So I got to unravel it a little bit.
Okay.
The district received two separate sets of funds from the state of California to help operate, $7.4 million the first year and $7.4 million the second year. The first year funding was conditioned upon doing a water study called the Option Study to how options for serving the town of Paradise with water. That study, independent of the district, was actually awarded to Sacramento State, and they have just sent out a request for proposal for that study. And in fact, if you check the PID website, you'll see a link to that request for proposal. That does include a whole series of options. Has very little to do, in fact, I'd say nothing to do with the viability of PID. But one of the options they're looking at is, in fact, extending water down into Chico for a whole series of reasons. I'm not sure I can identify all the reasons. But as I understand it, that is part of this, quote, option study done by Sacramento State. I think the professor's name is Randall Marks, who's doing it. But that information is all on the website. And you're right. There is a discussion about whether water ought to be extended down to Chico for a variety of reasons, but it really doesn't have anything to do with the viability of the district.
Tom Lando, what did I forget to ask you?
You know, I don't think there's much. The rebuilding process, as you can imagine, is horrendous. Involves almost any funding source you can talk about. I have to say, when I interviewed for the job, I was a skeptic. I said, how will the town ever rebuild? And I've got to say it's going both a lot more rapidly than I expected and a lot smoother than I expected. And my own impression is that both the town and the district have incredibly competent staff that are working very hard to work through this and come out the other side.
That was Tom Lando, interim general manager at the Paradise Irrigation District. You're listening to the Butte Report on KZFR. In Chico, although the city council did not meet this week, their actions at the last two meetings have stirred much controversy and even a threatened lawsuit. On December 8th, the first item of business for the newly installed city council was the approval of an emergency ordinance that gives the police additional tools to enforce rules and regulations, including the ban on camping in city parks and playgrounds. These additional tools include issuing misdemeanors. The next agenda item during that same meeting, the Homeless Solutions Coordinator, Susie Cockums, reported that there were no low-barrier shelters or sanctioned campgrounds anywhere in the city. This is still true today. And because of the pandemic, the only existing shelter, the Torres Shelter, is not taking in any new people in order to protect the existing residents. Soon after that meeting, starting on December 14th, the police target team began notifying people camped in Bidwell Park that they had to leave the park by last Sunday. There were no formal notices written, only verbal warnings. When asked where they could go, many people reported that they were told they could sleep on a sidewalk, but they could have no more than bedding, including no tents or personal items. The target team offered no recommendation for shelters or legal camping. In response to these actions, on Sunday, December 20th, Corey Turner, lawyer with Legal Services of Northern California, sent a letter to the Chico City Attorney stating, quote, "I write on behalf of my client, Joel Castle, a community member who does not have adequate shelter, to demand that the city of Chico cease and desist any current enforcement or plans to enforce any ordinances that punish involuntary camping and sleeping on public property," end quote. Corey Turner cited the case of Martin versus the City of Boise, which came out of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. When asked for comment, the city's public information officer emailed that, quote, "the city does not comment on threatened or pending litigation." To get a better understanding of the legal implications of enforcing a no camping ordinance without alternative shelter options, I spoke with Corey Turner and started by asking him to explain the legal reasoning of the Martin versus the City of Boise decision.
Sure. Well, if I were to boil it down to one sentence, it would be that you cannot punish people for being on public property when they have nowhere else to go that is safe and legal for them to be. What happened in Martin v. Boise was that the city had a pair of ordinances that worked together to ban sleeping and camping in the city, that combined to create a citywide ban on sleeping and camping. And in addition, it punished that by citing people who were found in violation of that were punished with criminal infractions or misdemeanors. And we find that what's concerning about that and what concerned the court was the fact that if there is nowhere for people who are unsheltered to go, then it is not constitutional, in fact, under the Eighth Amendment, with the cruel and unusual punishment clause, it is not constitutional to punish them when they have nowhere to go. The city of Boise did not have enough shelter beds for all the people who were unsheltered in their community. So if there's not enough indoor shelter and you are not allowed to be outdoors and on public property and shelter yourself, then what are you supposed to do? The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals recognized this inherent problem and recognized that it was wrong to criminalize people who are just trying to do what all of us need to do to survive, which is to sleep, to rest, and to protect ourselves from the elements.
Corey Turner, you mentioned this web of restrictions under the Martin versus Boise case. And then also in your letter to the Chico City Council, you cite the various ordinances. You cite the sit-lie ordinance, the what you call the civic center hours, which means you can't go into the downtown plaza between the hours of 10 o'clock at night and 7 a.m. in the morning. And you also talk about the waterways. You can't camp next to the waterways. Corey Turner, why are you issuing this letter now when these ordinances were already on the books? What has changed?
Well, it is true that these ordinances have been on the books for a while, and many of them were on the books prior to the Boise decision. Soon after the Boise decision, the city stopped enforcing many of these ordinances. And then when the COVID-19 pandemic came, the city continued not to enforce these ordinances. And as long as the city is not enforcing them against people who have nowhere to go, because in our community, we only have one emergency shelter, the Torres Shelter. Even if that shelter were full, it does not have sufficient capacity for all of the folks who are, all of our community members who are unsheltered here in Chico. Therefore, there is no real option for someone who is left out on the streets, out in our parks. There's nowhere for them to be safely, and we cannot punish them for having nowhere to sleep if they have no real option. In fact, the decision in Martin v. Boise specifically said that we cannot punish, and I'll quote from them, we cannot punish, and I quote, homeless people for sleeping outdoors on public property on the false premise that they had a choice in the matter. And that's exactly what we see here, and it's exactly what we saw in the case that came out of Grants Pass just this past summer. Stop me if this sounds familiar. There was a citywide ban on camping. There was a ban on camping in the parks, and those were punishable by the city if anyone was found to be violating those. What do we have in Chico? We have a citywide ban. We have a citywide camping ban. We have a ban on the parks. As you said, in addition to that, we also have our sit-lie ordinance, which I failed to mention, there was also something similar to that, a sidewalk ordinance in Grants Pass as well. And we have hours of operation that serve as a de facto ban against sleeping and sheltering yourself in places like the Civic Center and in our parks, even before this new ordinance, which has made it even more explicit that people who take these most basic actions to sustain their own lives, and in the process of getting the rest and the sleep that we all need, have to protect themselves from the elements, especially now in the dead of winter. It's made clear that the passage of these new ordinances, which include the ban on camping in the parks and the hours of operation, that we are now willing to punish people criminally for doing things which, again, the Martin decision clearly says that it is on the false premise that they had a choice in the matter. And that's what's troubling.
Corey Turner, this idea that they have a choice to camp in the parks or not camp in the parks, I think is sort of the crux of this conversation, is that if you do not have a choice of going to a shelter or going home, then this is no longer criminalizing behavior. This is really criminalizing poverty. This is criminalizing a person's economic status.
Well, that's exactly right. And we're only talking about public property here, but in fact, the city's ordinance expands that out to public and private property. So all of these ordinances make what I would call a web of criminalization across the city. And again, it is against people who have no choice. The point in time count in 2019 found that there were 389 people who were unsheltered in the city of Chico at that time. And also, it's very likely that was an undercount, and the point in time report said that itself. there, even if that were the exact number, we do not have 389 shelter beds in the city. There's no question. Mm. But the point that you make about behavior is a really important one, and one that shouldn't be lost. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of concern, and a lot of it justified about safety in our community. And the point that is extremely important and worth making over and over and over again is that, number one, that safety is a legitimate concern at all times. In fact, public safety is something that should be the top priority. And then within that priority, there is a large range of options for what true public safety and security looks like, which is a whole other discussion unto itself. But we can all agree, and I believe everyone does agree, that everyone has a right to be safe in our public spaces and in our parks. And the good news is we already have laws that can be enforced against people who are engaging in conduct, in behavior, that is dangerous, that is a threat to public safety. No matter where it is and no matter what that person's status is, whether they live in a mansion or whether they live in a tent, if someone is acting in a manner that is dangerous to themselves or to others, we have an obligation as a community to handle that. However, that's not what we're talking about here when we're talking about the camping, when we're talking about the prohibitions against camping, when we're talking about the hours of operation, when we're talking about a citywide ban on sleeping and camping on public and on private property without permission. What we're talking about, again, is pretending that people have a choice in the matter when in reality, that is a false premise, just as the Ninth Circuit decision said in Martin. And so, and if people are sleeping somewhere and protecting themselves, protecting their own safety from the harsh elements that we endure both in the summer and in the winter, as long as they have no real choice in the matter, they are not dangerous if they are keeping to themselves. And two, they are not committing a crime because they are doing that which is most basic, that which is most fundamental to being human. That's what the court found.
That was Corey Turner of Legal Services of Northern California. You're listening to the Butte Report on KZFR. Returning to the issue of homelessness in Chico, a day after a cease and desist request was delivered to the city regarding the eviction of encampments in public parks, the city issued a media alert outlining the obstacles to securing an alternative campground or shelter space, which includes identifying a location and then finding a service provider to manage it. According to the media alert, quote, city staff continues to work on an effort to potentially establish a location to accommodate camping for up to 40 tent sites and 30 single-room occupancy non-congregate units at the current location at the Silver Dollar BMX track on Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway. The city has identified city-owned property due to the proximity to the tourist shelter, but an easement from neighboring property for secondary ingress-egress to better enable emergency vehicle access is desired, end quote. The second problem that the media alert highlights is the lack of a service provider that can take on more responsibility during the time of COVID. On a phone call this morning, the city's homeless solutions coordinator, Susie Cockums, said that she just started a search for possible service providers outside of the county that could come to Chico and provide legal camping services as well as permanent supportive housing services. Cockums' investigation right now is to identify providers and how much their services would cost. She stated that because of the holidays, there probably would be little movement until after the new year. Finally, the city of Chico reported that the emergency warming center offered by the city last week when temperatures dropped to dangerous levels for unhoused people only 7 people took advantage of the center. The warming center does require that all possessions must be left outside of the tent, and sleeping is not permitted. On Christmas Eve, the predictions and concerns of public health experts are coming to pass regarding the rising spread of COVID-19, and Butte County is no exception. Today, the County Public Health Dashboard is reporting 6,000